Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Home Studio Craft Podcast. I'm Scott.
I'm Tippins.
How's it going, Tippins?
It's going well.
Yeah, busy week, huh?
Busy week.
Yeah, me too, man.
Yeah, I sent you over some of those songs.
And those tunes sounded great, man. You and Nunez are putting out some really good stuff. Really loved it.
Yeah,
really,
yeah,
like
I think
sincerely.
You're being nice, but I appreciate.
No,
it.
No, yeah. I wouldn't bullshit you. Yeah, I thought it was really good. Okay. Everything sounded good. So keep working at it for sure.
I appreciate it. Yeah,
yeah. Keep it going. You guys got something good.
Your new song's good too.
Thanks, bud. Yeah. Appreciate it. So today we have a special guest with us, Javier Pico. Javier is a keyboardist and a synthesist and has been doing it for quite some time. And we'd like to welcome Javier to the pod. How's it going, Hav?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good, buddy. So the reason why we've invited you here today, and thankfully you've agreed to join us, is because for a lot of home studio enthusiasts who are just starting out, the synthesizer can be kind of daunting as far as, you know, how does it work? And, you know, I just remember when I was starting out, like, what a mystery it was to me. So anyway, so I wanted to ask you, number one, like, how did you, like, first become interested in synths?
Cool. Well, first, let me tell you, I watched a few of your programs, and I think you guys are doing a great job.
Thanks,
man. You explain everything in very simple lay terms, which is needed because most of the videos that are out there on YouTube and so forth, they're for more advanced users, and they miss a lot of the basic stuff. So kudos to you guys on that.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. We appreciate that.
And so to answer your question, Scott, I'm originally from Spain, and my dad was a opera singer as a hobby. He worked for the government, but he was a frustrated opera singer, but we had a huge stereo and he would blast classical music.
Right.
And we only heard classical music until one day my dad brought an album called Switched on Bach by Wendy Carlos.
I remember that.
That was Walter Carlos.
Yeah.
It was a lot of Bach pieces on the Moog synthesizer.
Yeah.
And that was a modular Moog synthesizer built specially for him. And that transformed my life. I fell in love with that instrument.
Yeah.
And that led me to everything I have been doing for so many years.
And we can see that you've got quite a collection behind you there, for sure.
Well, I'll show you guys around in a bit.
Awesome.
So
what was your first synth? Like, was
my
it a
first synth was
it
actually
Moog?
A Moog preset synth called the Satellite. Uh-huh. It was a monophonic synthesizer. And I bought it here in the States.
So what does monophonic mean?
Mono means that it can only play one note at a time.
Gotcha.
But you can get around that if it has more than one oscillator, and oscillators are the voices.
Uh-huh.
So you can tune one oscillator to a different note. So you hit one note and you hear two different sounds at the same time.
Oh, that's
like
cool.
So you can get around that.
So like kind of a, like a, I guess a backdoor into a polyphonic synth.
Yeah.
Right.
Except that you can only play one note at a time. You can't play chords.
Right. Gotcha.
Unless you do block chords with the different oscillators.
Right. Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. It's
bad.
Fun.
Yeah.
So, at least for me. So that was my first synth. And we brought it over from the States, brought it to Spain because they weren't selling synths back then in the 60s in Spain.
Right.
And the voltage there is 220. So I brought it to a studio and I told the guy, this is 110, so we need to use this transformer. So, of course, they plugged it into 220 and the thing blew up.
Oh, man, what a drag. Oh,
so that was a short-lived.
And that was it. I mean, there's nothing you could do. What a bummer.
So then I was definitely interested in synthesizers. And I went to Berklee School of Music starting in 78. And I graduated in 83. And one of my majors was electronic music back then, which is basically synthesizers.
Sure.
And I learned everything there, starting with the ARP, which is a synthesizer manufactured in Massachusetts.
Right.
They're out of business now, but they were purchased by Korg.
Right.
So Korg is putting out their synthesizers now.
Okay. So does Korg like make make models of like those old ARP synths.
Yeah, I have a couple of them here,
Oh,
and
that's
they're
cool.
spectacular.
That's cool.
So I started with the ARP Odyssey, which is also a monophonic synthesizer.
Right.
Then we moved on in Berkeley to the 2600, which is, I have a couple of the Korg ones here. And then there was this huge modular synthesizer, the ARP 2500.
Right.
If you guys saw that movie Close Encounters,
Yes.
that's the big synthesizer they have there.
Wow. Have you seen that movie,
No, I
Tippins?
haven't. I've
Yeah.
heard about, I believe, the older one, but yeah, I haven't.
They have that big, is that's the one with like the, it's just like this big panel with all the patch cords, right?
Yeah, patch
Yeah.
cords and little matrix knobs. It's pretty
Yeah.
cool.
Those things are making a comeback. There's a lot of people who are like using those things now. Well, maybe
it's a
not a
whole
lot, but
different thing. It's a whole different thing than regular synthesizers, because you have to program each part, but it gives you a lot more flexibility because you can pick and choose the different modules, and rather than buying a synthesizer that's all complete the way they designed it.
right. So would
So,
you go ahead?
sorry.
Okay.
So, what years, like, around did synths started becoming prominent in music? Was it mid 70s or later 70s, early 80s?
Well,
From
the
y'all,
synth
both of your
started
experience.
really, the father of the modern synthesizer was Robert Moog, and one of the ones is that he used to change everything was the Moog modular that I told you about in that Wendy Carlos album.
Right.
After that, it became so popular that he designed the Mini Moog, which is also a monophonic
I
synthesizer,
remember
and
that.
that was used on albums, on almost all the albums in the 70s.
Yeah.
Then
Did, was
thereafter,
it
they
was that like the synth that Stevie Wonder used on like Talking Book and those
everybody
albums?
it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's got
it's
such an
on everybody.
identifiable sound. It's so cool.
Yeah, big fat sound.
Yeah.
Then after that, they design a the same company, Moog, a memory Moog. I have one of them here, which is a polyphonic six voice. And then other companies started getting into it, a lot of Japanese companies in the 70s, and then some European companies in also the late 70s.
Right.
But where synths really started coming into fruition and expanding a lot of the possibilities was in the 80s. And that's also at the same time that they designed this thing called MIDI.
Right.
It's a short, it's short for musical instrument digital interface,
Correct.
which connects synthesizers. And basically, you could connect one synthesizer to another one, play the notes of one, and have the sounds of both, and do all kinds of stuff.
Right.
That was pretty cool, and that changed everything.
Right. How, when you say it changed everything, what do you mean? Like it was easier to integrate into recordings at that time, or how so?
Well, before you had to have, I don't know if you guys remember a guy called Rick Wakeman and
Yeah.
all those keyboard players from the 70s, they had to have three or four different instruments and play lead here, strings here, and back and forth.
Right.
Well, when you had MIDI, you could program it so that, for example, MIDI had 16 channels, and by playing on a master keyboard, you could trigger different instruments to play different
So
parts.
when you say 16 channels that you could play on like one keyboard controller and control 16 different keyboards concurrently?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or if a keyboard had the possibility of having multiple parts at once, you could send four of those channels and different MIDI channels to that keyboard and play bass,
Right.
some different things
That's
just on one keyboard. And then at around that same time is when things like digital or just Performer, the first DAW, started coming out.
right.
And it's where you really took advantage of things like this, because you could program all kinds of things.
Right. And then right from within the DAW. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So for someone like me who maybe I want to incorporate synth sounds into my music, and I'm pretty much a beginner on m when it comes to music production. That's why we actually started this, is it's like someone who's more experienced explaining, the basics to me, basically. So when I'm looking at a synth, like if I want to make little tweaks, it's super confusing, honestly. So maybe just like break down the basics of them, how they work, you know,
Sure.
what the different adjustments do. Yeah, it's kind of overwhelming when you first, look at them.
Yeah, like how does somebody get in and just like if they want to make their own sounds? Because you've got like the stock patches in just about every DAW in existence out there. But if somebody really wanted to get into sound design or something, like how do they, like a guitar player always works on trying to develop their own sound. And so for a keyboard player as well, or somebody who's just getting into keyboards, like how would they, like Tippin said, like where do they start? Like how do they get to, like what things do they have, what knobs do they have to tweak?
Okay, cool. Well, first, I guess we have to talk about either hardware versus virtual instrument plugins. And I think for someone starting out, you should stay away from hardware synthesizers because they're more expensive. And there's some actual beautiful software synths that can do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so they can just buy like a little keyboard controller, USB or MIDI, and then connect that to their DAW and then use that software synth that comes with their DAW, for example.
Yeah, start with that
Gotcha.
definitely.
Okay.
And once you've graduated and you need more sounds, then you can get other virtual synthesizers or move on to the hardware ones.
Right.
I'm old school and I like touching buttons, so
Right.
that's why I have a big collection of these guys. But I do love a lot of the modern virtual synthesizers.
Yeah.
But going back to your question, you have to understand the basic structure of a synthesizer. It's just like a guitar, a sound source, and then you have different parts of or modules of the synthesizer that affect how that sound gets produced.
Right. So you said the sound source is the oscillator?
Yeah,
Okay.
oscillators, those are basically, it depends because now you have things like hybrid synthesizers. Like I have a Prophet X here, which has oscillators and also has samples by this company called 8DO that does wonderful samples. You
Right.
can combine that.
Right.
And synthesizers also have mic inputs. So you can have either a guitar or a voice coming in and use that as a sound source and modify it with the controls.
Gotcha. Okay.
But you start, let's just go to the basics. You
Sure.
start with the oscillator. And most synthesizers will have two, three, or some of these new ones have a limitless
Right.
number of oscillators. And that's how you pick the type of sound that you want. There's different waveforms, and some are smoother, like a sine wave. It's a very smooth wave.
Right.
Then there's others, like they're called sawtooth. It looks like a triangle. And those are a little raspier,
Yep.
brassier sounds.
Yep.
So what you need to do is start just turn off everything else and definitely turn off the effects if you want to learn,
Right.
because what happens with
When you say
these
effects, like the delay and reverb they might have enabled on the patch, right?
So the presets come so that basically you just touch it and it sounds great,
Right.
but they've done so much routing that you don't know what's what. So the first thing I would do is turn off the effects, reverb, delays, all that stuff, so
Sure.
you get narrow down to the sound. And
Right.
then you go back and they've probably done all these different routings for modulation. Modulation basically is taking the original
When you
sound.
say routing, so explain that a little bit. So what does that mean exactly?
Okay, so you start with your notes from the oscillator,
Okay.
and that's going to go all the way through the end of the synthesizer, and you have different modules that you can send it
I
to
see.
affect it in a different way. Like there's this thing called low frequency oscillator,
Right.
LFO, and that makes it wobble or do all kinds of things.
Right.
So, by the time you get those presets, they've done tons of these things
Sure.
and they move it all around. And a lot of the virtual instruments, you can go to different pages and just click on there and you can see what connections they did.
Right.
And then just start undoing that. But the secret is, and for me, was just spend hours with the thing and see what each little button does.
Yeah, just hands-on experimenting. Yeah.
Because the guys that program these things, that's what they've been doing all their life.
Exactly.
So,
Isn't that what you were doing with the Anna 2 and the Slate Digital?
just kind of messing with the presets and, not straying too far from that is mainly what
Right,
I was
just to kind of
doing.
get a feel for what each one of the
But
Gotcha.
Yeah, I haven't done that where, you know, I strip everything and really just play with, you know, the waveforms and the oscillators like that.
That's important because that way you know the basic blocks, and that if you start with a, or if you want a certain sound, you start with a sine wave versus a pulse wave or something, and then that's the building block. And then you can add all the other stuff on top and screw around with things, and possibilities are limitless.
It's incredible.
And you know, one thing that you can do is most likely on your synths, there's empty places to save your set, your whatever patches you create. So just copy the one so you don't erase the original one if you really like it. Copy it, give it a separate name, and screw around with that one.
Did
But
you
yeah, just
guys
play
do
with
that at
everything.
all? Like
Yeah,
save your
we
patches?
would do that, like, or we had a favorite like bank, so we would, you know, save that specific favorite to the bank. But essentially, yeah, like that, where we would save all the settings. But yeah, it's just, you know, looking at it, this helps a lot because it is, you know, super overwhelming. There's a lot of knobs and everything, you know, so.
So let me just tell you a couple important ones. One's called the envelope. You've probably seen that. It's called ADSR. And that's basically the shape of the note.
So
So
just explain what the ADSR means.
A means attack, D means decay, S is sustain, and R is release. And the knobs basically control just like a compressor, the input, how much you're going to affect each part of the sound. So the attack, if you wanted a very fast attack so that you hear it like a percussion, you put it down to almost zero, and you know it'll sound tack tack tack. If you want it to be like wah, wah, then you move it up slower so it's a slower attack, and then you play with all the other settings to get the type of sound you want. And most of these synths, you can see they have the image on the screen, so you can see how when you move the faders, how it affects the picture of the sound. And then there's all the modulation stuff, which we were talking about, which is just basically routing. It's like a compressor or a delay on a mixing board. You can the straight sound, and then also split that sound and send it to some sort of filter so it modifies the sound, and you can affect how much of that. And for example, if you get something that's pulsing, you can set that to your sequence tempo so it pulses at the same beats as your drums or whatever. Or if you just want it to be random, whatever you want, it's limitless, really.
And what is that setting called for like the pulsing?
There's different ways to do it. Depends on this synthesizer, but you're probably looking at the LFO, low frequency oscillator.
Okay, so you're looking at basically like the frequency on that, so you can kind of match that to the tempo of the song. Decide, yeah.
You can sync it to your beat.
Right, so the lower the frequency, then the slower that oscillation is going to be. Correct.
It's like I'm telling you, Scotty, it's just possibilities are
Endless.
endless. But the key tippins here is just screw around with the stuff, and you'll be amazed. You're going to come up with some great sounds, because most presets are your basic stuff, so you get those sounds. But then once you start messing around with it, you can get some really cool things that, you know, I saw one of your prior programs, and you were talking about putting effects in like different sounds that aren't really musical. So some of these noises that you come up with, you put them in the right place in songs, and it's
Sounds
just what it,
great. Yeah, it's just what it needed. Like it's really cool too to like take like one synth patch and then combine it with another or a couple more synth patches to create one unique sound. You know, I've done that before and that's always fun.
And for example, you can play with the ADSR on those so that one of those, not all three patches or two patches start at the same time. One starts on the attack, then the other one comes in, and they mix them like that, and you get some cool stuff.
Yeah, that's super interesting. That's
Yeah.
interesting.
And then you can add delays or reverbs to some parts and not others. So, It's pretty cool.
So when you I guess if you were asked by somebody who was just getting into synthesis for a particular like software synth, is there any particular one that you'd recommend, or you just say like stick with what you have in your DAW, get familiar with that first, or what would your approach be to something like that?
Well, probably for somebody that's starting, budget is a issue, right?
Yeah, usually. Yep.
So I would start off with the ones that come up with your DAW. They cover all the bases,
Yeah.
the strings, pads, percussion. I'll start with that and do all the things we were just talking about. If you are a native instrument, a contact user, they have gigantic library and tons of people prepare sounds and effects
Yeah.
and instruments just for them,
Yeah.
and that's amazing what comes with that.
Yeah.
So if you get Kontakt, for example,
Which I
they
have.
have you have
Yep.
it comes with a lot of instruments already.
Right. Right.
Amazing library there.
Yeah.
One of my personal favorites is Omnisphere from Spectrasonics. That is
What,
when I
why do
start
you like
using
them? Is it like just quality of sounds or ease of use
quality,
or?
it's just unreal. It has You basically don't need anything else.
Right. What's it? Who's it
It's
by? Spectrasonics?
yeah.
Omnisphere.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it's expensive. It's about $400 or $500.
Right.
It's just amazing.
Yep.
The quality that they have there of those sounds and the engineers programming sounds is
Yeah.
top-notch.
Yeah.
But it's all a matter of preference,
Sure.
And again, those are virtual synths, so you have to use a mouse to click stuff. And I'm used to turning knobs, so
Right.
I can always use these guys as well.
So maybe this is a good place to where you can kind of take us on a tour of some of your keyboards you've got there, and then maybe show us like in the physical world, kind of what those knobs and everything look like on a regular hardware synth. Does that sound
Sure.
good? Want to do that?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Here's one of those ARPs remakes by Korg. And this is just spectacular. I had one of these in Spain, actually. The original ones were orange, and I
So
sold it.
is this one of the ones that you actually use those the cables, the patch cables to change your
Yeah.
sounds?
Yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Okay.
After I do the little tour.
Sure.
So this thing, what they did is just modernized everything. They put MIDI on it. They added a sequencer, all kinds of stuff. So it's a lot more stable than the original ones.
Gotcha.
So one of the problems with the early synthesizers is that they were very temperament susceptible to weather and humidity. So they would go out of tune, and that's been fixed with modern technology. I
Nice.
have another one of these Korgs. This is the mini one, but it's
Right.
basically the same thing.
And so those cords that are in there right now, the patch cords, so that is, I mean, that's basically configured to give you a certain sound, correct? That's what that is. That's what we're seeing, kind of.
So what happens is that the synthesizer comes hardwired in a certain way, but by using the patch cords, you can get around there whatever it's hardwired
Oh,
and
I
route
see.
down from one place to a different place and create total different things. We're going to get to the memory Moog that I talked about before, but recently Moog created another version of that, the modern version. It's called the Moog One, which this is. This is an absolute monster. It's a 16 voice
60?
limit
60?
16,
Oh,
16.
16, okay.
With limitless routings, and just it's a very, very powerful synth, and it's amazing.
And it looks
Just love
cool. That's is that
love this thing.
wood? Is that real wood?
Yeah, this is
Yeah,
real
it's
wood. Yeah,
beautiful.
it's
Yeah.
beautiful. Got good action.
Yep.
This is my old Korg Lambda, where I used to tour with bands here in the States and in South America with this thing. It's basically a string and percussion preset machine,
So what
but
year is
back
that
then,
from?
this is from the early
70s,
80s.
early 80s.
Yeah, like 1980.
Gotcha.
Got a lot of jobs done for me.
I bet.
This is one of my favorites of all time, the
Oberheim.
Oberheim 38.
Yep, I
This
recognize
is,
that one.
from the early 80s. The action is the old cheap action, but the filters and the sound, the quality of the sound this machine puts out, you don't get anywhere else. It's beautiful.
It's unique.
Yeah, and my most expensive keyboard is this one.
Is that a Casio? It is.
Yeah.
So we were talking to Alan Najarian a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about one of the first songs that he wrote, and that's actually the keyboard that he used, not that exact one, but it was the same thing to write that tune, because it had like these little drum patches you could just play, and then you do your
Yeah.
little synth parts over top. It was super cool.
Oh, it's kind of a toy, but anyways, this is the one when we get into the different modules that I'll show you. This is the Memory Moog I was telling you about. It's the first polyphonic synthesizer by Moog, and like basically three mini Moogs in one. So this thing incredible.
So is that just an updated version of it, or that's like a replica of the actual,
No, this is the real thing from
that's
the
the real
80s.
deal from the 80s? Wow.
Yeah, this is the modern version, the one I showed you before.
I see.
And this, it's totally different,
So
but
how many voices does that those the Moog have that we're looking at right now?
this has six voices,
Six
but it
voices.
has three oscillators. So on each voice, you can run all three oscillators with different notes. So you
Gotcha.
can do all kinds of stuff.
I recognize that keyboard on top there. Is that a Juno? Yep,
Juno
Roland.
106. This is a beautiful Roland synthesizer from the early 80s. It's on almost every album in the 80s, New Order, David Bowie, tons of bands. This was famous basically because of the chorus that it has. It gave it a very particular sound, and it was very easy to use and program, and it's beautiful synth.
Yeah, chorus was huge in the 80s. The Roland Jazz Chorus amps, choruses on synths, choruses on everything, for sure.
So now we are at the mother of all analog synthesizers. This is the Oberheim Matrix 12, and this thing is a beast. It's again possibly on almost all the albums during that period of time. It was the synth that everybody wanted. If you want to look for one of these now, if you can find them for sale, they're upwards of 12 grand.
Wow. So this is from when? What period in time?
Mid 80s.
Mid-80s.
Yeah. And the limitless possibilities of routing, matrix routing here is just made it incredible. Plus it had the Oberheim oscillators and filters, which gave it that unique sound. But this is the mother of all synths back then.
So let me ask you a question. So, like for example, like the oscillators on an Oberheim and the oscillators on a Moog, are they? I mean, are they? Is it kind of like the difference between a Les Paul and a Stratocaster? Do they each have their own unique tones?
Yeah, because of
They
the
do.
electronics they use and the way they put the thing together.
I
So
see.
yeah, that's why I have so many different ones, because they each have their own character.
So I noticed that there's one brand of keyboard that I'm not seeing there, and the Yamaha DX7, for example. Any particular reason why you don't have the Yamaha? Not
I
a.
had a DX7 back in the early 80s when they came out, and it was that's called FM synthesis, frequency modulation. It's a whole different thing. It's very clean and digitally sounding, and it was really not my cup of tea. I like more analog stuff, so that's why I don't have one of those. But I did have one for a couple of years, and I sold it and bought something else.
I never really liked their sounds either, personally. Just personal preference. Not no
They're
offense
kind
to
of
any of
old.
the Yamaha DX7 users out there.
It's kind of for me, it's a cold synthesizer. The sounds just don't do it for me. But Yamaha has other magnificent keyboards. This is a monophonic keyboard that I bought in 1981. It's a Pro One by Sequential Circuits. Have you heard of the Prophet 5?
I have,
So this is the monophonic version of that super powerful synthesizer, and it's on albums like Yaz, Yazoo, Depeche
Mm-hmm.
Mode. These all those bands use this guy.
So was that kind of like in competition with like the original Moog, or was something different altogether?
Exactly.
It
The
is.
Mini Moog came out, and it was so popular that other companies wanted to have their own version. And this is the Sequential Circuits
Version,
competition. It's
right.
totally different synthesizers. They sound nothing like each other.
Gotcha.
And then the last set over here is this is a Roland Jupiter XM. This is a modern synthesizer, and it's got everything you ever wanted or could need, and it's a pretty handy thing. I take it when I go gig with people, so I don't have to carry these big ones. I
Right.
take this or a little Korg that I have, so it's
Right.
pretty cool.
That is cool.
Here's a Prophet X from Sequential. This thing is unique. It's Some say that it's the ultimate sequential synthesizer.
Oh,
It's a mixture of analog oscillators with samples from that company I mentioned before, 8DIO. And the good thing is that usually when you want to manipulate samples, you have to do it on a computer. Here you have all the different knobs that make it so much easier to work than if you go on a computer. So, and like I said before, I like knobs. So, and this is very sturdy keyboard.
That tactile feeling is definitely cool, for sure.
Oh
It's a
yeah.
lot more rewarding than moving a mouse pointer around.
Yeah, and it's got a heavy, nice keyboard action, so it's beautiful. And then here's another little one. It's called a Micro Korg that I use when I go jam with
It's like
people.
the tiny person
And
synth.
yeah, it's got everything you need for this little thing. You can program it too, but it's also got a vocoder, which is awesome.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Do you use it? Do you ever use it?
Yeah. All of a sudden, in the middle of a song, you'll start saying stuff through this thing. It's pretty cool.
That's very cool. Explain to
Yeah.
people how the vocoder works, because I think people are familiar with like that robot voice, but they
Yeah.
may not know how it works.
So basically, as I was telling Tippins before, you have different sources of sounds on these instruments, and when you have a connectivity through a mic, you can put a voice through it, and you can use the filters and the modulation and everything to change the sound and get those robotic voices that you hear all over the place.
And do you have
Pretty
to
cool.
play the notes on the keyboard at the same time that you're speaking into it or singing into it for it to work?
Yeah. So what happens? You don't have to, but what happens is when you play the notes, the voice comes out in the notes that you're hitting. So if you're going to play like a A chord, you speak and it'll hit all three notes. It's pretty cool.
That's fun. Yeah, it's a lot of
Yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
That's
All
awesome.
right.
Beautiful, beautiful collection. Beautiful collection.
Thanks. So let me show you a little bit of how these things are laid out. This is probably one that I can show you because, well, actually, let's go to this one. To the yeah. So this is what I was telling you. Basically, these things are lined up. So you have a sound origin and then all the different manipulations till you get to the outside, the mixer outputs. So basically, over here, you have a this is the ARP 2600 by Korg. And if you want to connect a microphone or a preamp, you can connect it and then adjust it for here, the input, and you get the voice going or a guitar, whatever you want. Then you have these modulators. Basically, these take the sound and they modulate in different ways that you can program to affect the sound. This one has three oscillators, one, two, and three. These are the sound sources. And basically, you pick your frequency. Let's see, turn the volume a little bit. See, you can pick, you have a mixer here, and you can pick for the three, what kind of frequency you want, and the waveforms. So you start with this. You got this annoying sound going on. So you can start with one oscillator or two or three, mix them up through here, just like a mixer. You bring them in any configuration you want. And then, like I said before, you can take the outputs
and reroute them to anywhere you want,
Right.
even to itself. So it sort of
So it
triggers
gets a loop
itself and it
back.
creates
Yeah.
a whole different sound.
Gotcha.
And then they also have these things that we didn't talk about. It's called white noise.
White noise
So
generator.
yeah,
Yep.
that's what this is. So
Gotcha.
basically, this is doesn't have much of a tone. It's just noise,
Right.
and it sounds like wind.
Sure.
And it's got different categories: white and pink noise,
Just adds to the
and
texture.
yeah, the different frequencies that it works with.
Gotcha.
Then you come into the voltage control filter, which is basically how you manipulate all the different filters and the routings to affect the sound. And then it comes out to
So would
the
like the
AU spectral
voltage
sound.
control filter, would that be similar to like a master bus on a mixing console where everything gets routed to that and that controls everything that's get routed to it? Is it similar in that respect?
Very similar, yeah,
Okay.
exactly.
Okay.
And so you see all the different inputs from these guys. They come into here, and here's where you send it to wherever you want.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Then it goes, the next step is the ADSR we were talking about before, which shows you the shape of the sound.
So that's exactly the ADSR buttons there, the attack,
Yeah.
decay, release.
The thing in release, yeah.
Right.
For example, if you want a long note that lasts forever, you bring this all the way up.
Right.
If you want a very percussive sound, you bring the attack down. If you want a very soft sound that starts very low and it grows, you bring the attack up,
Right.
and then these control the two medium parameters.
That's cool. It's a lot easier to see it laid out like that,
Yeah,
than digging
it
through the
is.
software stuff.
And it's easier to program when you see it like this rather than on a computer.
Sure. Yeah, everything's right in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically that's how these things work.
That's great, man. Well, listen, thank you for, spending your time with us here today. We certainly appreciate it. It's been great. I mean, it's been a revelation for me.
Me too. I'm just trying to soak all
Yeah.
this in. I'm going to be rewatching this
Yeah.
episode.
Me too. Me
Okay.
too.
Get my camera to turn around.
Yeah, and I think it'll be really helpful for people who watch it for sure.
I
Okay.
just have, I actually have one
Go
question
for it, brother.
about mixing synths. Like, with the variety of sounds and how many, some are super high frequencies, some are super low, are there any hard and fast rules for, like, when you're mixing synths or, like, best practices, for
For
example? Just for mixing them, like, for example, like bass, like, is down the middle, or like certain things
Oh,
like
you mean as far as like panning or things like
panning,
that
or
go?
like EQ, like, or in my b mind, like, with the variety of different sounds and different use cases for synths, there po I could see there not being many hard and fast rules, but are there, like, best practices when mixing them?
I mean, for me personally, when I'm mixing synths, I mean, obviously you have, panning to consider as far as the EQ goes. Generally it's like high pass, low pass filters or shelves, if you don't want to be so extreme and cut off all the frequencies. As compared to guitars or even piano for that matter. That's me. But especially in something where you have like a string patch or something like that, combined with other synths, you may want to accentuate certain frequencies, with a at a certain point, like 2K or whatever that is, just to kind of make it stand out from the other synth patches you've got going on. Yeah, I don't, there's no real hard and fast rules. I mean, I would just say be wary of like the low end or even on the high end, anything that might conflict with a vocal maybe. So how about you, Hav? What do you what's your opinion?
Well, first of all, Scotty, I've heard some of your mixes, and you do a great job with mixing keyboards and everything.
Thanks.
My philosophy, not just on mixing but also playing parts, is the keyboards can fill up so much bandwidth
Yeah.
on the song, and they can really interfere with other parts. So what I try to do both with parts and mixing and the frequencies and the filters and so forth is make sure that they're not interfering with the vocals. And many times they interfere with the guitars because that mid-range
Sure.
section, some of them are playing the same things,
Yep.
same frequency. So you can just change the patch a little bit, take some of the brightness off, or pan one side or the other. That's what I recommend. Just keep an eye on making sure that you're not interfering with other vital parts of the
Yeah.
song, because they just tend to wash everything
Another
up.
technique too is like if you've got like a busy synth sound like going on, like when the vocalist is singing, for example, you can use sidechain compression to kind of have that duck behind the vocalist or even a guitar part or whatever. It's super effective. So that's kind of a workaround.
Yeah, we
That's
were
something.
actually had your sidechain compression video up. Me and Nunez had your sidechain compression video up
That's
with
cool.
a synth because we were having some issues with certain frequencies, and we actually used that
Did
video
that
for
good.
it. Yeah,
Awesome, man. I'm glad that was
not sure
helpful.
it didn't turn out like anything like ear mixes, but
Well,
yeah,
working
we're
on it.
getting there.
Yeah.
Well, one
So.
thing about side compression is so personal to me, I don't like the whole pumping thing. So you have to be careful on your settings because you can get
Yes.
boom, boom, boom. For me, it's
Absolutely.
really boom.
Yeah, it's something that's very subtle, like when you're doing the gain adjustment for the signal that's incoming, that you're actually gonna duck behind the, let's say, the vocalist, for example. You want to make sure that it's a subtle effect, so it's not like Hav says, where it's like that noticeable, you know, where it like goes away and comes back
Yeah,
really loud. So it
that makes sense.
should
Yeah.
be super subtle for sure.
There's a lot
So,
of modern pop productions that they love that,
yeah.
but it just drives me crazy.
Yeah. You old bastard.
Yeah.
Get
Anyway,
off
well,
of my
I hope.
lawn.
Yeah. Hope you guys enjoy this.
Yeah, man. Listen, thanks so much for your time. We definitely appreciate it. It was awesome. It was really enlightening.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely. I
grateful that
really
you let me
appreciate
into
it.
your little window here,
Yeah.
and that I can be a part of it, and
Yeah.
hopefully we can learn a little bit.
Sounds great, brother. All right, well,
Okay.
we'll catch up to you again pretty soon.
Yeah, thank you
All
so
right.
much.
All right.
Well,
Adios.
take care.
See ya. See you,
See
buddy.
ya.
All right, Tippins. That was a good session, man. I learned a lot.
Me too. I'm gonna, like I said, I'm gonna be rewatching this one for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was great.
All
That's
right.
great.
All right, man. Well, listen, have a good week and we'll do it again in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you too. Gonna use some of these synth principles in my mixes.
All
So
right.
appreciate it.
Sounds good. See you, buddy.
Peace.
See you, everybody.